I have to announce to you that I will never retire.
What do they think?
They got the answers. I change the questions.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck.
All right, Dion, bring it in, dude.
All right, what's up, everybody? This is the Crimson Canvas Podcast. I'm your co-host, Dion Harrison, along with Evan Showman, and my other co-host, the number three co-host, Dan Rose. What's going on, Dan?
I tell you what's going on. You bring the show in like a champ, and you still call me the third host, man.
That was
your big chance to intro me before Evan.
You're not in the room.
That's true. Is he here? Fuck him.
If you're not in the room... Well, you number three.
So I have to start flying to San Diego on Wednesdays for the show.
Then you'd be number one.
All that Crimson Canvas money we got.
Big, deep Crimson Canvas pockets.
Yeah. What's going on, Dan? Apparently you don't like the way I bring the show in, Dan. So, Dan, I'm going to be really boring today, Dan.
Dan, you hurt a man's feelings.
Dan.
I just said, you're the one that said that someone else wanted to bring the show in, and I was like, yeah, let's have Dion do it.
If you have Dan's name backwards, it spells NAD.
Wow. That's...
It's very mature, isn't it?
Very immature.
Real mature, Rondell. You know what people missed last week, Dan? They missed all the impressions that were being done on the show.
I know. Well, we didn't do those until after we... stopped recording, we started recording video, and they each busted out like all the impressions that I had no idea you could do.
Pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, dude, seriously, we're gonna start doing like the Evan Showman impression of the week on the website.
Yeah, you're gonna have to.
Some of them were really good, some of them were aight.
Your De Niro is fucking spot on.
Yeah, my face is spot on. I don't know if the like the
that's
sound. True. You know, because I'll be like, yeah, it's good, pretty good. You know, it's gonna be a good show. It's good. Just a little bit. You did offend him a little bit.
No. Oh, he's gonna kill
you. My Smeagol one is on.
Oh,
point.
Yeah, that one was.
Oh, bad. Dude, yeah, hit us with a little bit of Smeagol.
Smeagol.
Man.
Gollum. He's Gollum.
I don't care, Gollum. I'm not a fucking fan of that shit. I just think it's good impression.
You didn't like Lord of the Rings either?
Dude, let me give you a little quick synopsis so you can remember it this time. If it happens in space or in fucking fantasy land, I ain't watching it.
Well, let's see. They speak English in the Shire, so that tells me... In fact, they speak with British accents.
That means you don't like Game of Thrones, you
nope.
like Harry
don't
Potter.
Like don't like it.
What? I can't even fuck with you anymore, Dan.
Do you like superhero movies?
Nope.
What? You like The Notebook, right? Because it's real and you can relate. Because you kiss girls
Wait,
in the rain.
You don't like you, so you didn't like The Dark Knight.
That one wasn't that bad. I liked
what?
The Dark Knight.
Even my mom doesn't give a fuck about superheroes. She's like, that's the best movie ever. And that's
I do want to see like Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad could be epic.
I don't hate like comic book movies. I don't like go out of my way to see them. If I don't see them, I don't care.
What about
but like Lord of the Rings? All that shit, fuck you it. Heard? Harry Potter, we'll never
what
watch
What about 300?
300 was okay.
What?
I liked it.
Sin City.
I never saw Sin City.
What?
Dan, you gotta step up your movie game.
Dude, I watch shit that's like, that I like things that are like based, like crime movies and like documentaries and stuff like that.
Like Finding Nemo?
Yeah, a documentary.
Finding Nemo? It should have been called Following Dory's Dumbass, but, you know, Finding Nemo, whatever.
But the new Dory movie is coming out here soon. So
good, they needed to correct a few things.
I'll be checking that out.
You be checking it out? You better.
Fuck yeah, dude, I like kids' movies. They're funny as hell.
Like kids' movies, don't like 300 sci-fi.
Something.
I literally just said 300 was good. I didn't say I didn't like it.
You said it was all right.
It was all right. It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen.
The greatest thing ever. At that time, when it came out,
everybody was, this is Sparta! And we'll kick somebody down a pit, because that's how everybody was rolling back then.
I like The Departed is my favorite movie.
Okay, that was a really good movie, though.
I like movies like that. The Departed, I like Black Mass. I like crime stuff, like mafia movies.
Donnie Brasco.
Yeah, I thought Donnie Brasco was good.
How about Hoosiers?
I liked Hoosiers.
Yeah.
I like sports movies, too.
Dion didn't see Hoosiers.
You're a fuck. What?
You know why?
You're like a basketball guru. You didn't see Hoosiers?
I am not white. That's right, I said it.
There's black people.
Barely! Barely!
Whatever. Now you know, you see the white man struggle for one.
We see enough of that in history.
There's a big white struggle in Indiana that you don't know about.
Oh, shit.
The struggle is real, Dion. How about giving a shit about something?
Hey, he got game. That's probably my favorite basketball movie.
That movie's so...
It's so awesome because Ray Allen's in it.
Well, it's dope that Ray Allen's in it and Chasey Lane and Jill Kelly.
And Denzel.
Yeah, fuck Denzel, but I mean, Chasey Lane and Jill Kelly, porn stars from the 90s.
Yeah, Chasey Lane,
They welcomed him.
That's
why he picked that university. That and because Rick Fox walked him around.
That's how you get...
Rick Fox is a pimp.
It's like a Louisville scandal. What do you expect? How do you expect these?
They're throwing white ass at these brothers that were like never seen a white girl before,
of
right?
Of course. Oh, this is what we can get if we go here.
And she's under 250 pounds. Like, that's my white girl right there.
Sign me up.
She's 135.
It's so racist.
It is. I have no comment on this other than to say watch Hoosiers.
Okay, I'll
Gene Hackman's in it.
He's epic.
Right?
Yeah, he is epic.
The whole movie. Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, man.
Chris?
Who?
Chris?
Who's Chris?
The guy used to play with us. He said he looked like...
Don't talk about your basketball team.
Maybe people want to hear about it, Dan.
All right, Dan. What do you want to talk about then?
This ain't no bank robbery.
Finger fan, what do you want to talk about, Dan? I don't care, man.
What's going on?
What's going on in MMA?
I don't know. Ronda Rousey's not fighting at UFC 200. Or ever again, probably.
That's what... Who said that? Rashad? You didn't say anything?
Yeah.
Rashad!
Yeah, Rashad, get a shout out.
Let me ask you a question, Dan, and I posed this question this morning.
Okay.
USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, they only test for steroids, growth hormones, anabolics, diuretics. They don't test for... recreational drugs.
Out of competition, yeah.
Okay, so marijuana is suddenly not a performance-enhancing drug. Because it used to be, according to Nevada, then Nick Diaz gets off, still has to pay $100,000. For what? For taking a non-PED?
Yeah.
Answer me that. How is the Nevada State Athletic Commission above the United States Anti-Doping Agency when it comes to that kind of shit? Because everybody's like, no, marijuana's not a PED. Then why didn't Nick Diaz get fined?
Well, because it's still against the Nevada State Athletic Commission's, it's a banned substance on their list. And if you're having a fight and you're holding a fight within the state of Nevada, you have to follow the guidelines set forth by the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
But why, if the Anti-Doping Agency doesn't consider it a... performance enhancer, and why the fuck does the State Athletic Commission consider it a problem?
Well, realistically, there's no way to know that. You would think probably as an athletic commission where you're suspending and levying fines on people, it makes more sense to cast a wide net. So the more things that you say are a banned substance, the more opportunity you have to fine people. And obviously that shouldn't be the goal of an athletic commission, but, I mean, I don't know why else they would do it. I don't know if the U.S. says that it's not a performance-enhancing drug. I don't know why.
Was Nick Diaz's suspension from an out-of-competition drug test?
I don't believe so. I thought it was a result after his Anderson Silva fight.
So he was high when he was fighting Anderson Silva.
I don't think they can pinpoint it. I think that they can...
30 days in your system.
Okay, so it's supposed to be 12 days. 12 days is out of competition.
Okay.
So, say he smoked a month before. Well, that's 30 days. So how could you find someone on something that's that 50-50 inconclusive?
Well, it's again, you're asking me a question that I'm not part of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I don't know how it all works.
Because you have half a brain.
But if it's a banned substance, and they say that if you test positive for it, then you face these repercussions, then it's on the athlete to not have it in their system. And if it lasts 30 days and your test is 12 days out, then you know the window. I mean, you know the appropriate window when you should stop smoking and or, you know, whatever it is you're doing. And Nick Diaz knew the rules, and it's not the first time he broke them. I thought that the penalty was outrageous, you know. And whether you agree or disagree that marijuana should be a banned substance, it is on the banned substance list. So for me, I think that they rectified it in some manner. He's now able to fight again in August rather than having a 5-year ban, which was fucking ridiculous.
That was.
They lowered his fine, which to me is still an outrageous amount of money to have to pay them. But until you can get the Nevada State Athletic Commission to say, okay, this is not a performance-enhancing drug, it is legal in some states, let's just stop testing for it, you're gonna have to live with the rules.
Okay. So then, cool. So the USADA, they're just a whole separate body that has their own set of rules.
Well, they're in charge of testing the athletes and reporting the results of that. I mean, the Nevada State Athletic Commission actually commissions fights. They're the governing body when a promotion wants to hold a fight in Nevada. That's the governing body. They sanction the fights. The U.S., whatever it is, doesn't do that. They're an independent company that is hired to test athletes. And they don't levy fines, and they don't do that. It's up to athletic commissions to actually, you know, to fine and suspend fighters. It's, I don't know, do I think that you should... Do I think marijuana should be on the list? No. But if it is, and you're a fighter, and you know it is, it's your responsibility to not have it in your system.
That's
you're
true.
Tested.
That's true. But, you know, we all know that weed ain't that bad. Dan, you ain't bad at all.
No, hell no.
You get a recovery drug when your body's sore after playing for 3 hours on the basketball court, and you need...
Or getting punched in the face repeatedly.
And let's be honest, I mean... For some people, the alternative is, like, being prescribed medication that, you know, has very negative side effects. I mean, a lot of people manage their stress and their, you know, they manage it through marijuana use and everything. And without having that option, I mean, you're saying, you know, you're going to have to manage your stress through what? Taking pills that are given to you by the doctor, and I don't know if those pills are legal under the Nevada State Athletic Commission either. You know, can you test positive for Adderall or Prozac
or
I don't know,
or Anderson Silva's Viagra?
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
No, he got busted. He said one of his pills was a Viagra pill, but come on.
Yeah, they just happened to be laced with fucking steroids.
You know they're gonna lie.
They all fucking lie. Wait a minute.
What?
I took what?
Nobody just owns their shit.
When?
Nobody's like, I fucked up.
I didn't
take
that.
Dude,
I look at Anderson Silva, and I might be naive, but I don't see him as a guy who, throughout the course of his career, used steroids. I see him as a guy who had a horrible injury.
Yeah.
And coming back from that injury, used steroids. You know, to come back for it. Does that make it right? No, it's still a banned substance. It's still illegal. And not only does he have to face the whatever the commission gives him, but he has that it's on his legacy now. It's tarnished. You know, but I don't know. I don't see him as a guy that was a perennial user. Like, I don't see him in the same category as, like, a Vitor Belfort.
Okay.
But if it's illegal and it's banned, and you're a fighter and you earn your living fighting in that state, you have to follow those guidelines, even if some of them are fucking ridiculous.
The weed.
Or lobby to change.
And then here's the other one. Then John Jones gets popped for cocaine out of competition, but they're like, oh, well, it was out of competition, so we're not going to really count that.
It's like, come on.
So then why'd you even say anything?
Well, yeah, the UFC flat out swept that under the rug. They had a major... heavy money fight coming up with John Jones.
There you go.
And they basically said, oh, this isn't going to see the light of day until after the fact.
And it shouldn't have seen it then.
No, if you're not going to have any kind of a response to it or a penalty of it, it should, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why that cocaine test was ever public information or.
In the bylaws, it says, we will test for cocaine. If you are positive and out of competition testing, we're going to tell people about it, but you won't get fined.
And what's crazy is that coke is like, it's in and out of your system, so.
In like a day,
yeah,
or two,
so,
whatever it is.
So if you get busted for that, I mean, you're just.
Out of competition! They like test.
Well, that's like,
two months before a fight, and they're like, oh, he popped for cocaine, so here's what we're going to do. We're not going to do anything.
Then what's the point of the test?
What's the fucking point of the test?
Who was it that pissed hot for cocaine after a fight? Was that, Melvin Gillard.
Oh, dang, that's bad.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, dude. Recreational drugs, I don't think, by and large, should be covered under, you know, the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I think they should be looking at HGH, testosterone, different steroids.
I got
Adderall.
You people, every single bit of footage you saw in the 70s and 80s in the NFL, the guys were taking cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
That
Saturday night.
First of all, fuck you, Joe Montana never took no cocaine.
Oh, really? Do you think Fred Biletnikoff did? Because I know for a fact he did, from his daughter.
I'm not talking about no Freddie Biletnikoff.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer.
25.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Raiders wide receiver. White guy with stringy hair.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Joe Montana. Joe Legend. Yeah, that's no
Deion
good.
Deion Harrison is a Vikings fan, and his team shit all over his dreams.
So bad. I'm hoping that it's just a nightmare, and then I'll wake up and it's game day.
Yeah, waking up from this one.
You can wake up next year when they play football again.
Oh, my God.
When Seattle plays next week.
What's crazy, exactly, Seattle is the two-time NFC champion, so it's like you had a chance to beat one of the really good teams in the league, and you just blow it. Well, it sucked because Blair Walsh had a great game, too, and it just didn't get enough of that kick.
Yeah, that was not a good kick at all.
That's happened to you before. In our basketball league.
What happened?
Deion has a great game, and then he has to go to the free throw line to ice it, and he's like, clack, clack, clack.
What happened last night, though? Has
last
clutch
night,
free
last
throws.
Night, Deion was clutch.
Yeah, Scott.
Hey, did John Jones' brother test positive or something?
In the NFL?
Yeah.
What
happened with Chandler Jones? Anybody know?
He said he was hospitalized. That's all I saw.
Dang. Oh, I wonder what happened there. Hope he's okay.
No, you don't.
I do, too. I don't wish bad shit on anybody.
Shit. Yeah.
You hear about...
Except for
that's what I'm talking about.
You hear about CM Punk in UFC 200?
Oh, saying that's when he's going to...
Yeah, that's when he's going to fight.
Oh, they're saying Chandler Jones had a bad reaction to a legal substance.
Well,
yeah, it was a synthetic marijuana. I just
all that spice?
Synthetic marijuana? Yeah. What's synthetic marijuana?
The spice.
Dude, you don't know that's spice?
What?
It's like fake marijuana. Yeah. They sell it in, like, convenience stores.
Like near beer?
It's like it doesn't show up on... It's like a way to smoke weed.
So why don't people do that instead? And why?
Because it's not good for you. It's like...
Yeah, obviously. It's sent this dude to the hospital.
Though, isn't it?
Weed is... You can control that. You can just chill in, but that's like an...
Weed is from the earth.
It's from the earth. That shit's fake.
It's like Cat Williams says, weed is not a drug. It's just a plant. And if you happen to light it on fire...
There are
side effects.
It's true. I mean, it comes from the ground. I don't smoke weed. I got no problem with these guys smoking weed.
I don't smoke weed either. No, I don't. If anything, I'm not, you know,
I don't smoke. I don't drink. And I'm fine with that.
Straight edge.
But then again, I'm not playing at the highest level.
You might be.
That's a fact.
Might be.
I might be the toughest motherfucker you've ever met, though. Say, God, who played Tuesday night, Deion, with a broken toe?
I told you.
Oh, by the way, how is the athlete? Great.
It's still bad. Evan needs to be tested for steroids.
I wish.
I know. I think Evan's on the
shit. He has to be on the juice. On the gas.
I wish I was on the juice. I'd be fucking shredded. Be like.
Yeah, I saw that CM Punk's first opponent was named. Mickey Gall, I think his name is.
The guy that they did that looking for a fight thing.
Yeah. You guys watched any of that?
Nope.
No.
It's actually pretty entertaining. Matt Serra's pure hilarity on it. You know that video clip, Evan, where they wake up and he's like, fucking cocksucker?
Yeah.
That's from that show. It's hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's basically every episode, it's Nick the Tooth, Dana White, and Matt Serra, and they go to a different city, two cities per show, and they eat and they watch fights, and that's it.
So a good life.
Yeah, and then in Atlantic City, they joined the Polar Bear Club. They all ran out and jumped in the ocean.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it's actually pretty entertaining, but this guy, Mickey Gall, he's fighting Michael Jackson at UFC 196.
Like, who's Michael Jackson?
I don't know. He's some amateur guy that's getting a shot in the UFC to fight this Mickey Gall guy.
Like,
and
Michael Jackson.
If Mickey wins, he gets CM Punk, so.
Ooh, it's a big payday.
Pretty big payday and exposure for him.
I wonder what CM Punk's getting paid.
He's not getting paid some good amount of money.
I'm sure.
It's not like he's going to get 4-4.
Don't forget about that first fight Reebok money.
Oh.
That 2000.
Phillip Brooks.
Yep.
They put that on the shirt and he was like, what?
What is this?
What are those?
I'm sure that CM Punk is on his own special deal. And he'll debut at UFC 200 probably and rake in some serious cash.
I hope he wins.
I know you do. I already told you what I hope happens.
Yes, you hope that he gets his ass whooped.
Look, you listen to it. I don't wish ill will on anybody.
I don't know why every time Evan says something that I say.
Because it sounds exactly like you.
I do not sound like that.
I do not sound like that.
My name's Dan, and I don't sound like that.
Oh, we're out of control.
Tell me how far off, Dion.
You.
What?
Don't tell him the truth.
Just stop telling the truth, exactly.
All right,
tell the truth.
I'm going to transition to Monday Night Raw.
You fuckers. It's not called brothers. It's called African Americans.
Yeah. I hate Evan Shulman.
Oh, I'm so glad Rashad called you out on that.
Hate.
That was so great, because you were like, it's not called brothers. It's called African Americans. He's like, now you sound like a racist.
Yes, it's true. That happened.
It's all right. Goddamn. Block it out. We'll block it out.
I would if Evan didn't bring it up every fucking week.
This is why people listen. They listen because they want to hear the goods. They want to hear me taking Dan Rose out of the equation. If I was a defender and you were on offense, I'd take you out. If I was Johnny and you were Daniel's son, Sensei Kreese would say, I want him out of the competition. Sweep the leg.
Put him in a body bag.
Dang.
Yeah, I feel the love, Evan.
It's clear. It's clear as day.
Well, okay, wait. You want to talk about Monday Night Raw?
Hell yeah.
It was poop.
What?
Yeah, I am so fucking tired of Vince McMahon already.
Oh, Sam said the same thing.
I said the same thing last night. I'm like, Vince is fucking just show up right now.
Who would you rather have, Vince or Stephanie McMahon?
I'd rather have neither.
Right?
I want Triple H.
No, any of them.
Well, you need somebody because that show is a pile of shit right now.
Yeah. But one person. The highlight, my favorite part, besides New Day, which they're getting kind of lame
getting
too.
Getting kind of tired.
Yeah,
they are.
But it's that feud between Ambrose and KO. They're just beating the shit out of each other every week.
See Dean Ambrose.
Oh, well.
I mean.
Yeah, Dean Ambrose is not.
Renee!
Feel my pulse. I'm still alive.
Kevin Owens, you want to fight? Kevin Owens, you want to fight? Fine.
I'm going to fight Kevin Owens. Yeah!
I'm going to fight Kevin Owens.
Yeah. Dang, so you guys, well, yeah, Dean Ambrose, he's all right,
he's
but.
He's whack as shit, come on.
Yeah, he's shit house.
You don't think that bounce off the rope clothesline is cool?
No. I'm over Sheamus, too. I'm tired of Sheamus.
I told you. You liked him 3 weeks ago. Stick with your man.
Dude, I can't because there's no consistency. It's just, And then Stardust and Titus O'Neil, just a completely wasted match.
How funny was when he tried to get that kid to do the dance with him, and the kid was like, who?
Kid would just picked him up, and he was a scarecrow.
Who are you?
Yeah. What the fuck? You're not John Cena.
Get away from me.
That was
the
awesome.
Rhino's too close to the car.
But, okay,
yeah.
The U.S., new U.S. champion.
Yeah, for fucking 2 days.
I saw that. So terrible. So
what the? He loses?
He lost on SmackDown?
He lost it yesterday.
Kalisto just won the title against Alberto, and then the next night on SmackDown loses it back.
They didn't even change the fucking nameplates on it.
Oh, dang.
Do you think they did it because they, like, blew the spot or something?
No.
I think they did it because they used it just to get a cheap pop, and now they want to put it back on Alberto Del Rio.
Now you're going to watch SmackDown to see how he lost.
I'm not going to watch SmackDown.
I'll watch it. I like SmackDown's a chance to be really with your boy announcing.
Mauro Ranallo. You cannot say his name. You're like,
no, I don't even remember his name.
Let's hear you say Mauro Ranallo once.
Mauro, what?
There's some things last night I was trying to get after our game. Dion's trying to say things and he couldn't say shit.
Last night was rough. I was so tired.
You couldn't say the word and? Or you're like, ar.
Yeah.
Ar.
I was so tired.
Ar.
Man, I slept like an hour for a game.
Say, I want you to
I was
say.
I excited when Kalisto won.
I want you to say Kalisto or. Alberto or Alberto Del Rio. I want you to say it and see how it turns out.
Kalisto or
yes, take my say it quickly. Kalisto or Alberto Del Rio.
Why you gotta do me like that?
Because I want to hear what happens.
I do too. Our listeners all want to hear.
Nobody
wants to
hear shit.
Come on, let's hear it.
All right, Kalisto or Alberto Del Rio.
Suck my balls, Evan. He was looking out the window with his eyes closed, like.
Kalisto or Alberto Del Rio.
He's like, cross his fingers, close his eyes, took a deep breath.
You got this. Hey, that's how I was in the intro, too. To bring us in, I was so scared. I was like, I got this. I got to believe in myself.
Hey, his voice, did you notice his voice went up an octave? He was like, hey.
He definitely was like, hey, this is Dion.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Dion.
And he called himself the co-host. He's like, instead of saying, I'm your host, Dion Harrison, and along with, he's like, I'm your co-host, Dion.
I am Dion Harrison. Next to me is Evan Shawn in the classroom versus Dan Rose.
Yeah, the full, like, Terminator robot voice. Hey, everybody.
I'm so scared.
Oh, my God. He looked like cows, like, on line for the slaughter. Just,
it
like,
was rough.
Looking at the other one like, yo.
My hands started sweating, Dan. It wasn't good at all, but I made it.
I was watching, dude. I could see the fear was real.
Apparently, it's better than me.
You didn't want
to. Well, you do it every week. We're just mixing it up a little bit.
To get you guys used to the limelight. I mean, I'm used to it. I'm gold. People listen to this show because I'm gold.
You introduce everything the same way.
How do I do that, Dan?
So here's Evan. Welcome to the Crimson Canvas podcast, ladies and germs. I'm your host, Evan Showman, along with my co-host, Dion Harrison, and our third co-host, Dan Rosie.
Sounds like Eric Cartman.
I know. Your voice changed three different times.
That's sometimes you do that. I'm keeping it real.
Welcome to the Crimson Canvas podcast, precious.
Now we have Gollum in the studio.
Yeah, don't call him Smeagol.
I know, I didn't want to call him Smeagol.
Don't call me Smeagol, black man.
Don't call him Schmeckle.
I'm glad you're listening to our show, Hobbitses. And then we got the Dan Rose over there. This stupid shit.
What a jackass.
Oh, man.
Oh, so, man, the only good thing about Raw, Chris Jericho is boring. You see him
at least open
in trouble
school.
For his, he said something about his back of the bus brothers. Not in trouble, but, you know, all the PC world that we live in now.
Yeah.
Everybody was like,
oh,
it's so bad.
As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, man, he's going to nail his ass for that.
That sucks. I hate this world that we live in. Why is everybody so damn PC?
What, dude? I'm PC principal, bro.
You're not PC principal?
Are you PC, bro? I'm the UC Riverside chapter of PC, bro.
Is this unfortunate that everything that you have to you say these days You gotta, like...
Taking away all of our good words.
Yeah.
Listen to you talking, Dion. You dropped, like, the N-word, like, 6 times last
week. Why.
And that's
Nobody's censoring you.
That's what I'm saying. So you go and say whatever you want. Not whatever you want, but...
I mean, hey...
People are offended by everything, really.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody's so sensitive. And then they get, somehow they get guns and shoot people because of it.
If you're, like, overly sensitive, this is not the right fucking show for you to listen to.
I don't think anything is the right.
This is a fantastic show for sensitive people.
That's true. You did bring up The Notebook earlier.
Yeah, I said you like The Notebook. Dan likes The Notebook. That's what I brought up earlier.
Quit saying I like The Notebook.
Okay, well, you don't like Star Wars, then you like The Notebook. You white, you like Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck.
You think the new Batman movie is going to be awesome, don't you?
I think it's going to be cool.
Which one?
The new
The Batman versus Superman one? That looks good.
Remains to be seen.
What, you don't like it, Dion?
I just don't like Ben Affleck, okay?
Dude, how do you not like Ben Affleck?
What? Who are you? What am I hosting this show with this guy for? Are you kidding?
You guys don't like Ben Affleck?
We don't hate Ben Affleck, but he's overrated as hell. That's all
Dude,
I'm saying.
Ben... I can't even believe I'm having this conversation.
You have to.
I can't believe I have someone defending you. You don't like Ben Affleck? Like,
You're gonna have to.
Why don't you like Ben Affleck? Seriously, I'm serious.
Because he's Ben Affleck. He's just Ben Affleck. The reason why everyone was upset that he was Batman, because Batman's supposed to be cool, and Ben Affleck is the opposite of that.
I don't know, man. I think Ben Affleck's cool.
There it is.
The only cool thing that he ever did was date J-Lo.
And there's nothing cool about
J-Lo's
that
J-Lo's so hot, dude.
What?
You don't think J-Lo's hot?
Hold
on. Evan Sharma doesn't think J-Lo's hot.
My friend, she used to date Mayhem. Anyway, she's an actress.
Who used to date Mayhem?
You don't know her. But she,
I thought you were talking about J-Lo. I was like, bull fucking shit.
No. No, J-Lo hasn't dated Mayhem, that I know of. But she she was in the video, in one of her videos, and she had instructions that no one could look her in the eye. Bitches like that, fuck bitches like that. Seriously, I can't stand
We are not saying anything about her personality.
Fuck, I don't... Makes you ugly.
You ain't lying.
It makes you ugly to me.
You are lying. J-Lo is not fucking ugly.
She's not ugly, but when you do shit like that, Dan...
Dude, don't fucking change your whole persona.
I think J-Lo's hot, but that's a bitchy thing to do.
That's what I'm saying. Dion and I are on the same page.
So maybe she's a bitch, but that doesn't change if she's hot or not.
That's what I just said. I'm like, she's hot.
So I want to hear you say that J-Lo's hot.
Say it, Evan.
I'm talking to you, Dion.
I said J-Lo's hot. J-Lo was fine.
Leave it at that.
You saw her with The Rock at the, what was it, the People's Choice Awards or the Grammy?
Golden
Globes. Nobody cares. But I saw her and The Rock together. She's fine.
Did you watch, dude? Is it me or when you watched The Rock and he talked at that thing, did he just sound exactly like Barack Obama?
I didn't watch. I saw a picture.
Oh, he sounded exactly like Barack Obama.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I'm just saying.
What, you racist now,
dude?
God damn.
damn. Fuck.
I like Ben Affleck, and apparently I'm racist now. I can't believe you guys don't like Ben Affleck.
He's
a bunch of dicks.
He's just. Ben Affleck, you know?
He's
fucking good, dude. He does good shit.
And
he's like...
He killed it.
He what?
He's generous. He helps people out. He and Matt Damon do the whole Project Greenlight thing. He's a fucking good guy. He's a good dude.
He's Ben Affleck. Sean Penn is a douche, okay?
Holy.
I agree. Sean Penn is a total douche.
That's a douche for you.
Ben Affleck's not a douche.
Isn't that... Wasn't he with the... What's his name?
The prisoner guy.
Drug lord, dude.
El Chapo?
Yeah.
The government couldn't find him, but Sean Penn's doing interviews with him. Spicoli did an interview with El Chapo.
All right, well, that's it for the first part of the show. We're going to have Nate Quarry on in just a minute. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Hold it now. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Crimson Canvas podcast. Evan Shulman here with my man Dan Rose, and on the air we have our special guest, Mr. Nathan Rock Quarry. Nate, what's happening? What's going on? What have you been doing?
Man, I'm just living the dream every damn day.
Every damn day.
Every damn day.
Well, how are you living the dream? Like, you know, because my dream is to come home and there's like a bunch of big titted blonde bitches like kind of laying around.
I think closer to your dream would be to come home and have your house covered in Bowen superhero statues. Am I correct?
Yours is. Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm living the dream.
I have seen Nate Quarry drop hundreds of dollars on a Hulk bust.
Did you? Were you there for that? Well, the amazing story is that my good friend Randy Bowen has just gone through a horrific divorce, and as such, as those things usually go, there's a lot of selling and separation and destruction. And so as I helped him close down the warehouse, I also was privy to actually being able to get quite a few of the statues. So now, I am my house is a nerd paradise, I'll tell you what.
This is like your dream.
It is. I could literally bury myself in Bowen statues.
I mean, that really is living the dream for Nate, because if you don't know, ladies and germs, Nate is a huge, huge nerd, comic nerd, nerd in the traditional sense of nerd. He used to be a huge nerd with glasses till he learned how to punch people in the face.
You know, yeah. The funny thing is I haven't changed at all. It's the world that's changed around me. So the things that I thought were cool 30 years ago, now everybody else is catching up with.
It's true. The world has definitely gone more pro-nerd.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Plus the ladies love it, because as anyone who's seen Revenge of the Nerd knows, jocks think about sports all the time. Nerds just think about sex.
Yeah, and you too could rape the head cheerleader inside of Moon Bounce and have her turn around and be like, wow, are all nerds as good as you?
You are really hung up on the fact that the cheerleader got raped in that movie, aren't you?
Nate, back me up here.
This is the second time we've had this conversation on this show.
Yeah, I'd have to say that it is definitely rape. It's a very comedic rape, but everybody was able to laugh it off. Back then, ladies and gentlemen, not everyone got offended at every single fiction type thing, such as when there was the rape scene in Game of Thrones, and you even had politicians saying, that is uncalled for, I'm not watching this show anymore. At which point I thought to myself, huh, so cutting off a man's penis, seeing people beheaded, these things weren't enough, but it was rape, that was the final straw that ended your viewing of this fictional story. It's not like the writer called a press conference and brought out a gagged and bound woman and raped her literally in front of everyone while she was screaming and crying. That would be offensive. That would be a crime. As soon as you start using those words on fiction type things where no one of any intelligence should take those seriously, then you have the problem, not the creator.
Maybe had Game of Thrones gone more of a good-natured rape where the end result is good, like Revenge of the Nerds, nobody would have been up in arms about it.
So it's the intent of the rape. That's the key.
Yeah,
that's
if you have a good-natured raping, it benefits the
nerds. How do you plead? Guilty or innocent? Well, guilty, but my heart was in the right place, even if my dick wasn't.
That's right. See? With a good-natured intent.
Dismissed.
I think everybody can leave that raping with
so
a smile.
They can
on their
listen
face.
To this segment and go, "There's no, you guys are low class. There's nothing funny about rape. I beg to differ." Watch Revenge of the Nerds, and you will see funny rape.
There's funny everything. It's just all in how it is presented.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Lewis Skolnick actually married Betty Childs after that. Just so you know,
there's nothing funny about real rape. Actual rape. There's nothing funny about actual tragedies.
Right.
But no. I feel that it's two of my favorite comedians right now are Tracy Morgan and the young kid on Saturday Night Live. And the reason why, and that's how little I know about the kid. I don't even know his name. But the reason why he's one of my favorite comedians right now is his father died during 9/11.
Pete Davidson.
Yes, Pete Davidson. He has made jokes about that and was in a roast where people make jokes about him, and he sat and smiled. Things that your average person would go on a shooting spree, go on a screaming spree, go on the news and claim victim. And you see him right there. And so I went to his Twitter page. It's now gone for some reason, but I went to his Twitter page just to tell him, man, I really admire what you're doing. And he had all sorts of tweets talking about how he thinks about his father every single day and how much he misses him. And I thought, man, this guy really gets it. And he's able to take away the barbs, take away the stinging from this tragedy by trying to make light of it so he can deal with it. He hasn't cheapened it at all. And then Tracy Morgan, after being out for like a year, year and a half, something like that, in a terrible tragedy where his limo got ran over by a Walmart truck and one of his best friends was killed, he does a TV commercial, and the first thing that's said is, Tracy, where have you been? Or some reference to him not being around, and Tracy just looks at the camera and goes, give me a break. I've been in a coma for a year. And I was like, damn. That man knows how to laugh at himself, laugh at life, and it made me just think to myself, I wish not only that others could do that more, that I myself could do that more as well. So I thought that was just pretty badass on their part, that they truly understand the difference between satire and tragedy.
Yeah, you know, during that Justin Bieber roast, that what's his name? Peterson?
Pete Davidson.
I'm thinking is Keith Peterson, the referee that thought that what's-his-name was out when he wasn't Abel Trujillo. But Pete Penis Grease, whatever his name is.
Pete Davidson.
He says Kevin Hart, you know, Kevin Hart was in Soul Plane, and he goes, Kevin Hart, your movie Soul Plane was the worst thing I've ever had to deal with involving a plane.
Yep.
That is amazing. And I forgot. That's why I saw him and heard him say those things. That's just incredible. That raises the bar for all self-degradation.
You know, you love to go online and kind of, I don't want to say stir the pot, because it's usually not your intent. Well, most of the time it's not your intention. But, you know, you go online and just say how you feel, and then, you know, most people are on board, but you have some that are just like, fuck you, Nate Quarry, I hate you. That's not
well,
named
people
Dana. That's
generally...
not that is it. That is not named Dana White, by the way.
The funny thing is I feel that in most scenarios, most beliefs or whatever, if I have an opinion, I will state it. If I don't, I will also state I don't have an opinion. I haven't formulated one. I don't have enough information. But when I do have an opinion on something, it's something that I've really thought through. And there's generally facts, statistics, things like that to back my thoughts up. Just like, and every once in a while I'll post something about guns. And it's hilarious because people only hear what they want to hear. And that's what I found truly interesting. You listen to Obama just give his talk on gun control. He actually stated in his talk, I'm not coming for your guns. I'm not coming to your house to take your guns. Immediately, the Republicans came out and said, he's coming for our guns. He's forgotten about the Second Amendment. We'll protect you from him. Run, hide the children. And I'm reading this going, good God. And so I'll post something like, you can't argue with factual numbers. The facts state if you have a gun in your house, you're 22 times more likely to shoot a loved one than an intruder. So I looked at that and I said, okay, so what does that mean? I have guns in my house. I'm a gun owner. I'm a responsible gun owner. So that makes me pause and think, huh, that's really interesting. If the odds go up that much higher, then I need to be that much more diligent and careful with my gun ownership. So my guns are locked 100% of the time unless my hands are on them. There's no way in hell I'm going to leave my guns laying around for any reason. Secondly, if I hear a noise in my house in the middle of the night, the odds of someone breaking in to rob my house or even worse, to kill me in bed or rape my wife, my girlfriend or anything like that, the odds are so ridiculously low compared to how high the odds are that someone in my household is using the bathroom, I'm probably going to go with that, even if I'm a little concerned. And on top of that, before I even thought to shoot through the bathroom door, knowing that my girlfriend is asleep in bed next to me, I'm going to holler out, "Hey, who's in there taking a dump?" And on top of that, I'm going to think to myself, what are the odds someone broke into my house to rob me, rape me, whatever, and in the middle of this committing of the crime said, "You know what? I should have gone before I left the house." Well, I'll just go into the master bedroom and use the bathroom right there. No. No, those types of things don't happen. So when I post these things, I undoubtedly, there's the 1 or 2% of the population that is just so off kilter that I'll have someone just go crazy. "You're saying once again you're for gun control, blah, blah, blah." And so I respond calmly, "Hey, I'll make you an offer. You find where I say I'm for gun control in any of my posts, I will write you a check for $500. Go ahead, I'll wait." And that plays right into, I had a guy say basically the same thing, that I was just a tool and I was being played by Obama and such, and that there has not been a mass shooting in the United States for 15, 20 years, that every single one of them has been completely concocted. And then he even referenced the one that happened in Southern Oregonian a little bit ago, where an MMA fighter got shot, went to the hospital, all those types of things. So I said, "Okay, you know what? I will give you $5,000 if you disprove this." Very simple. It's public information who this fighter is that got shot. Get yourself up to Eugene, Oregon, or wherever it was. Meet with him. Take some pictures proving that he never got shot. I will reimburse your expenses and pay you $5,000 in cash. How about it? At which point, of course, they just go into this rage and start repeating the facts. Like, there's no way in hell anyone could be caught with half of a smile within 5 days of a tragedy like this happening. That there's no way in hell somebody would wipe away the blood before they rolled them out on a gurney in front of 200 children that were a part of this school. No. And so then I go onto their page and go, "Hey, just want to, you know, I'm serious. I'm not making this public. $5,000. Because if you offered me $5,000 to prove something that I believed, and I didn't have to pay you anything if I was wrong, hell yeah, I would take that $5,000. I would be very simple, because I put my money where my mouth is, or I would be more than happy to put your money where my mouth is. Because I don't go off half-cocked on beliefs or thoughts that just make no sense whatsoever. I would rather know the truth and be wrong than live a lie and be right." You can quote that. You should put that on a postage stamp.
And that was pretty deep, actually.
That was deep.
You know what?
That's who I am.
That Reebok would make a shirt. It would be called Nate the Rock Quarry, and spell your last name Q-U-A-R-R-I-E.
Or C-O-R-Y. Nate Corey, C-O-R-Y.
C-O-R-E-Y. Nate Corey. And then we could put that quote, and they'd probably quote it wrong.
Yeah, it would.
What do you mean probably?
Reebok for life.
It would be like, "Nate Corey hates guns."
Loves Reeboks.
Yeah. Have you seen Jim Jeffries stand up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so. I think he's hilarious, and all the stuff that he says, it's a lot of the stuff that when I'm talking about guns, and I'll say it one more time, I'm not a fan of gun control. I'm a fan of responsible gun ownership. I own guns. I'd like to make it a little bit more difficult for bad people to get guns, but that's a whole other discussion. But listening to Jim Jeffries talk about it is just amazing, with the facts that he puts up. And we always hear this, "Well, I've got my guns to stand up against tyranny and to protect myself." And like, okay, well, how come when the Boston bombers went off, how come you weren't patrolling the streets looking for them? No, you were in your house hiding away. Do you really think that if the government was coming for your guns, that your 38 and grandpa shotgun or even your high-powered rifle is going to keep away the most bloated military the world has ever seen, to which their response is always the same. The army wouldn't go against their own people. We're their brothers and sisters. They'd stand with us. To which my response is always the same thing, too. Then what the hell are you worried about? They're going to stand with me. Okay, well then, so no one's coming for your guns. What are you worried about? Well, they're going to come for my guns. You just said the army would never come for your guns. That's right. Then what are you worried about? It's my freedom. Second Amendment. Okay, so these slave owners who believe in witches, these are the guys you're developing your entire life belief system around. Gotcha. No adjustment should be made to anything said 200 years ago. We cannot grow with the times. The very fact
No, it's all still applicable.
The very fact that it's our right as opposed to it's our responsibility. And I just met a congressman yesterday, and he started going off on gun control. And I said, hey, buddy, you know, take this for what you will. I'm not for gun control, because as soon as you say gun control, people immediately get upset. Immediately, that is addressed directly at them. I'm going to come to your house, and I'm going to control your guns. I said, as soon as you say that, it turns people off. What I'm for is responsible gun ownership. Then if somebody says, I'm against responsible gun ownership, then you know they're a whack job and you don't have to continue talking to them. But we apply responsibility to everything that we do. You want to get a home loan, you got to see that you're responsible. You pay your bills. You want to get a car, same thing. And not only that, you have to have insurance. All of these things that go into it. Can you imagine if it was our teenager's right to drive a car? It would be Mad Max driving on the freeway. But instead, no, it's their responsibility, and if they want to undertake that responsibility, then cool. And it's so funny that, and I think honestly, what it really boils down to is people do not trust their own government. And that's the one argument that I have no counter to. If somebody says, I'm against all this, and I start quoting my facts and figures, and they go, I just don't trust the government. I'm like, okay, you win. I got nothing for you. Because that's what it really comes down to. If you trusted somebody, you wouldn't worry about it. But our own government has been so underhanded, duplicitous, and so many different dealings. It really, nobody likes their congressman. Everybody hates our congressman. At least half of the population hates the president, no matter who it is. It's just people do not trust our own government. And that's what it really comes down to.
Well, you saw Making a Murderer, right?
I saw the first two episodes, and then I heard how excited everybody was getting, and then I heard the counter argument that there was facts left out and these types of things, so I'm not necessarily going to get too excited about that series.
Oh, that's such horseshit that things were left out, because you should hear what they said was left out. It was like, yeah, but they left out that he had gray hair at the time.
Well, the one thing that, surprised me that they left out was apparently there was sweat under the hood of the car that belonged, and skin cells that belonged to Avery under the hood of the car. And, I mean, I understand the blood evidence. Obviously, Nate hasn't seen it also. I'm not going to go full spoiler on this.
I won't remember.
But there was There was blood evidence that had been tampered with and everything else, so kind of left the blood evidence in the case open for interpretation. But I don't know if they found skin cells and sweat and everything where they would have gotten that if it hadn't come from Avery himself.
Well, and all of this plays into what I think is one of our biggest things right now is the distrust of law enforcement. And that is just that is one of the biggest hot-button things right now. The very fact that there's a blue line should make everyone pause. When I hear people say, oh, I can breathe because I listen to the police. It's like, really? So that's how you were raised, huh? You came up in Camden, New Jersey, or in Detroit, Michigan, where you got stopped and randomly searched every single day? Because I know if I got, and I have been stopped when I was in New York and they went through my bag. It upset me. Well, first off, I'm like, hey, look, I'm white, okay? Odds of me being a criminal really low. Let's put that out there. That's a joke, in case you didn't get it. But if your kid came home from school every day and you slammed them up against the wall, searched their pockets, went through their bag, and asked them, what have you been up to? What have you been up to? I know you've been up to something. How long is it going to be before your kids hate you and start breaking laws? And then you have all the facts. And the sad thing is people don't want to expand their horizons. They don't want to have any empathy for anyone. They live in their own little bubble. They only understand what they've seen with their own two eyes. So they're not looking at these other websites. It's just like I was saying before, if you have something that's known as the blue line, that doesn't exist in any other profession. There's not the janitor's line. Hey, who didn't clean this toilet? Hey, man, we're not saying nothing. No. But when it comes to the police, and there was the case just a while ago where the officer stopped the guy for having a taillight out on his car, which was not illegal in that state. Now, for some reason, the guy rabbits. Maybe he's scared, whatever the case may be. He runs away. Cop shoots him in the back and murders him. Walks over, drops his taser next to the perp. Another cop walks up, completely fills out on the report, nope, they were battling for the taser. It was completely self-defense. The only way that this cop is in jail right now is because there was a guy walking by and pulled out his camera and filmed the whole thing. That's the only way that this guy got justice. So you're going to tell me that this officer was, this guy wouldn't have gotten murdered if he didn't have a broken taillight and then didn't run away. Not everything is a death sentence. And the police themselves are not supposed to execute that sentence, even if it was. They're the ones that are supposed to be bringing the guys in. Now, I've never been a police officer. I would assume it's an incredibly difficult job. Very, very hard. You never know what you're going to roll up on. But whenever I'm having this discussion with people, I always ask them, what is the most dangerous time to be a cop in American history? Everyone's always like, oh my God, right now, it's like open season on cops. Nope. Two worst times to be a police officer in the past 100 years, Prohibition and the 1970s. It has never been safer to be a cop in the U.S. than it is right now. In fact, 2013 was the safest year on record. It was so low, so many fewer police were murdered on the job, that it's actually an outlier and they don't even include that in. Now, of course, every police officer getting murdered is definitely a tragedy. And I think that they're working for the greater good, or should be, in most cases. So it's definitely a tragedy. But it's nowhere near the most dangerous job in America. Now, I think one of the saddest things with police and why I could never be a police officer is because all I'm concerned about is moral laws. Because just like look at marijuana is now becoming legalized in the United States. Are they ever going to legalize rape? Are they ever going to legalize murder? Are they ever going to legalize beating your child within an inch of his life? No, those are moral laws that anyone with a half a brain can look at and say, that is wrong. Everything else is subjective laws. Just like I got a ticket a couple years ago for talking on my cell phone. I was going to a dinner party. I got called about the dinner party. Picked up my phone, spoke on it for about 30 seconds. Police in my rearview mirror pulled me over, gave me a ticket for talking on my phone. And I'm thinking about that. You know what? I caused no danger to no one. I didn't hit a car. I didn't run over a pedestrian. Absolutely nothing wrong happened. I did not break a moral law. I broke a law that somebody said, hey, this is too dangerous. We can't do that. Well, what if we took all of that time and effort from incarcerating people and fining people in things that may cause trauma and injury to others and put that energy towards things that actually did cause trauma and injury to others? Isn't that a lot more important? Just like when they talk about drugs. Oh my God, people on meth, it leads them to steal and rob and all these kinds of things. Well, isn't that illegal? So what if instead of arresting people for minor drug offenses, like I think 80% of all drug busts, everybody in prisons right now, it's for possession. It's not for distribution, for selling, for anything like that. It's they got caught with drugs. And to save you from yourself, from these dangerous drugs, we're going to take away years of your life and lock you in a concrete box where you'll get to hang out with murderers and rapists and take away your right to vote and take away your ability to get a job or to get a loan because that's much better for you than smoking a joint at the end of a week on your couch inside your house while you watch TV. That's not a moral law that people are breaking. That's a society law where somebody said, whatever their motivation may be, I don't want people having these drugs. Well, how'd that work with prohibition when we cut off alcohol? I think it was, and I forget the exact number, it was either 2,000 or 10,000. I think it was 10,000 people died during prohibition because directly related prohibition. That was enough for the government to go, okay, this is not working. We need to make it legal. The people have spoken. Besides the fact that all of the congressmen, all the politicians had special laws for themselves, so they were able to continue drinking and keep their alcohol. They had a whole separate setup for themselves. How long does it take? How many hundreds of thousands of people have to die? How many millions of years have to be lost from people being incarcerated? How many trillions of dollars have to be lost before we put an end to this drug war? It's funny because if you talk about, well, I want to give some money to treat these people that are addicted, you know, maybe 1,000 a year or 10,000 a year to help them get off drugs and help maybe retrain them, get a job. Oh, hell no. There's no way in hell I'm helping those addicts and those alcoholics. They got themselves into this. Okay, so you don't want to spend 10 grand to helping this guy become re-educated and trained, put him through some rehab. Oh, hell no. So your alternative is then to lock him up at a cost of $50,000 to $60,000 a year in prison. Yep, that's what's best for America. No, no, it's not. You live in fear. You've never thought. You don't have any thinking ability whatsoever. All you're doing is sitting there listening to Rush Limbaugh, a convicted addict or a confessed addict, and you're hearing the worst-case scenarios at all times. I was... It's funny, too, and I was listening to Chris Christie talking about the dangers of marijuana and the dangers of drugs, and as I was listening to him, I was going, okay, how long before he gives his personal story that he knows somebody who died of drugs? Oh, yep, here it is. Family friend, died of drugs. Okay. Well, hey, Chris, how many people do you know that have died of heart attacks? How many people do you know that have died of obesity? What's the number one killer in America? Oh, diet, that kind of stuff. What about people who die of smoking and alcohol? Why aren't you trying to ban those things? Why aren't you sending the cops around with scales to weigh people, get their body mass, so we can say, oh, you know, you're not allowed into the buffet, you're too fat? No, it doesn't work that way. They've demonized drugs, and then they make everyone afraid of them. And I have had people die, friends of mine die of drug use. I have friends die of alcoholism, all of these types of things. But I know that it's an underlying system beyond what truly... The alcoholism, the drug use is generally, that's masking what the real problem is. Beyond that alcoholism, that drug use, there's always childhood issues. There's always abuse. There's always things underneath there that aren't addressed, that the drugs and the alcohol allow people to cover up. But instead of trying to help those people cope with those things, we just deprive them and lock them in prison. We just threaten them instead of trying to help them. And to me, that's just really sad. It's insane.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nate, as always. But I got to tell you...
You're a smart man.
Yeah, I know. But one of the more important things I want to talk about other than this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sorry it took so long. First off, Dan here doesn't like Star Wars.
Oh, my God.
What the hell? I'm going to... No.
First of all, this is just FYI. This is Evan every time this is brought up. I have never in my life said...
It's for
I
kids?
I don't watch Star Wars. I've never gotten into it. I don't like sci-fi for the most part. I don't actively dislike Star Wars or think, you know, sit at home and twist my mustache and think about how I can ruin Star Wars for
people.
He
doesn't even have a mustache.
That's true, I don't. Quit blowing up my spot, Evan.
He hates Star Wars, and he's a liar, and he wants to take your guns. Oh, my God.
That's going to be on my new Reebok shirt.
Dan Rosie.
Dan Rosie hates Star Wars.
And guns, and he's going to gay marry your son and impregnate your daughter and then force an abortion on her. No, wait, that's Obama.
All while testing cocaine and smoking weed.
Yeah.
The new Star Wars was amazing.
I loved it. I thought it was great. Even if you weren't a fan of Star Wars, I think it was great.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, so I don't know.
It was a complete story. You could have just walked into the theater and sat down and watched it and been very entertained. And the fact that it's already the number one movie America has ever seen is incredible. It's the highest grossing movie of all time from America. And I don't think it's even launched in China yet. Or if it has, it's just been recently. And as soon as it does that, I think China is the second or third largest movie population, watching population in the world. It's going to just skyrocket through there, too. It's going to blow away those blue freaks and Avatar and that crazy girl that wouldn't even share the door she was floating on with her lover. What a joke. Star Wars for life.
You know, it's so funny to me that, like, every interview with George Lucas has been like, oh, they screwed up my story, they made it too much like the old days. Like, he has nothing but negative things to say, and it's like, dude, you gave us Jar Jar Binks, shut the fuck up, you're done.
Yeah, he's the ex-lover. He's the jilted ex-lover. His wife has divorced him for J.J. Abrams. And now, of course, what's he going to do? Sit around and go, oh, yeah, J.J. Abrams is much younger. He's got a better body than me. Well-educated. Yeah, she's better off with him. I'm just kind of chubby. I'm resembling Jabba the Hutt more and more every day. No, he's not going to do that. And that was hilarious when he said, oh, they made it look too much like my Star Wars. Yeah, that's why it's called Star Wars, dumbass. Why it's not called Space Adventure with black guy and English chick. No, it's a Star Wars movie. We don't want to see it reinvented every single time. We want to see the same stuff, but with a new twist on it. I thought it was really cool to see two-seater TIE fighters. That's amazing. I love that stuff.
Oh, the whole thing I thought was great. And they set it up. I was a little thrown off by how emo Han Solo's son was. You know, he reminded me of JT and Grandma's Boy, you know. Sit on my
face.
You
know, I heard that too. I heard that too, and I started laughing. That was spot on, hell yeah.
So, you know, when he took the mask off, it was like, wah, 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 you know? that was just kind of the...
you this whole time?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he sounded like a badass the whole time, and then he took his helmet off, and it was like, hi, guys. You know, I don't know. But it was a little, I don't want to say disheartening, but it wasn't the best surprise of the movie, I guess you could say. I was kind of hoping that this badass guy who kept throwing temper tantrums was going to be a little more hardcore, but, you know, oh well.
Come over to the dark side, turd nuggets.
Come sit on my face.
Ay, ay, ay.
Shut up.
Yeah. Right, we wanted hardcore. We got Napoleon Dynamite as the new dark, whatever. So yeah, I mean, again, it was.
What was his name in the movie?
They both had similar names. One of them was he Kylo Ren? Yeah, he was Kylo Ren.
Kylo okay. Ren, huh?
Yeah,
yeah,
he was
terrible with the names.
Yeah, he was Kylo Ren, and she was like Rey.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, it's a guy from This Is Where I Leave You. Okay, I was just wondering what actor played him, because I hadn't seen it, obviously, so.
You guys left me that message. It really bummed me out. That's all I could think of when I'm watching this shit, and I'm like, ah. But, I mean, I've seen stuff on the guy, and he's dope. Like, he's super dope. And...
Oh, yeah, he I saw him in an interview. He was a part of a fight club. So I know he had to watch The Ultimate Fighter Season 1. So, you know, he's probably a fan of mine, just like Paul Stanley from Kisses.
Paul Stanley from Kisses, a fan of yours?
Yeah, I got to meet him. Strange, odd story. I get an email one morning.
They all are with you.
That's true. I get an email one morning from this guy saying, I just wanted to let you know I saw your comeback fight against Pete Sale and that you'd had back surgery. And I called my doctor the very next day, and I had my back surgery. And I was so afraid before that I'd never be able to have kids and or that I'd be in so much pain that I would never be able to start a family. But now I have a family thanks to you. I was like, oh, that's really cool. Thank you. You know, and I'm Gene Simmons' personal assistant, have been for 20 years. So if you ever want to see a show, let me know. So they came to Portland, and I hit them up and went down there. And Gene Simmons looks at his buddy, and he's like, hey, is this the fighter? I'm like, yeah. Gives me the thumbs up, and then I go over to shake Paul Stanley's hand, and he looks at me and goes, dude, big fan. I was like, yeah, that's cool, whatever. Whatever, Paul Stanley. It's all right.
Nate has such
there you go.
No, you don't understand. Nate's got a great poker face, but after said thing happens, he's like, oh my god, you had good guy. Oh my god.
Smell my hand. Smell my hand.
That's awesome.
It smells like kiss.
I'm never gonna wash his hand again, guys.
That's nice, Evan.
It's filthy.
Oh, I've seen, dude, you don't even know that some of the, I've written full articles on Nate, things I've seen up close, and it's like, it's shocking, some of the things that happen. Like, no way that just happened, you know? Just like, here, let me give you, here's a story, Dan.
Uh-oh, here we go. I like these.
You should like these. That's why we have people on the show, because we have stories.
Let's hear it. Let's go. I'm
so
ready.
We're at Comic-Con. Most stories start that way.
Okay, so it's another nerd story.
Easy with that, all right?
Nerds, hey, you guys just said that today is Happy Nerdville. Everyone
likes
nerds.
That's our word. That's
right. Oh, I can't use that? My bad.
No, you don't even like Star Wars.
Yeah.
All right, you're right. I do not like Star Wars.
Thank you for admitting it.
I finally admitted it on the air.
Oh, my God.
Move on. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, well, nobody likes you.
Well, let's get to the Comic-Con story
nobody
than
likes you, Dan.
On you again for not liking Star Wars.
No one likes you. That's where we're leaving that. So we're online to get food at Comic-Con, and Nate was with this chick. She was a friend of ours.
Autumn.
And we were on... standing on the line, and there, you know, there's kids and dads, and there's just people everywhere. And I can't remember what Nate said to Autumn, but I remember what she said to him. She goes, you know what, Nate? Fuck you! Like that. And this guy turns around. He's wearing, like, hush puppies. He's balding. And just, like, the last guy you'd ever expect to be a fight fan. And he's with, like, an 8-year-old kid, and she goes, Nate, fuck you! And he turns around and goes, son, I'd like you to meet the UFC fighter, Nate Quarry. And just like that.
You serious?
And Neil's like, hey, how's it going? And then Nate puts two hands on his shoulders and says, son, I hope that this teaches you you shouldn't hang out with women with low moral fiber. And I was like, how did that just happen?
That is awesome.
Son, don't hang around with women of loose moral fiber.
Loose moral fiber, that's what it was.
That is awesome.
That's a Nate Quarry story. Here's another Nate Quarry story. This was my first brush with Nate Quarry stories. I'm watching a video of, what was it, Evan Tanner versus, was it Rich Franklin?
No, I don't remember who it was. Shocking.
David Loazzo, I don't know. He was cornering, or he was fighting someone, Evan Tanner. And I guess there used to be a cut man who wore like a sailor's cap. I don't know who he is.
With all these buttons on it and everything. And so Evan texts me and says, hey, you were covering Evan that time. Who was the guy in the funky hat? And I just text back, I've never cornered Evan.
No.
Or I've never cornered Evan. I wasn't cornered. It was Evan versus Phil Baroni.
I've never cornered Evan Tanner in my life.
Baroni. He's like, no, dude, I'm watching you right now. And I after a few going back and forth, I just said flat out, you are high on crack. I was not there.
No.
And this is how confident I am. I'm sitting at home watching TV. Evan is watching me on TV on a DVD at that moment. You are high on crack,
nice.
Evan. That's not me.
No. I have never cornered Evan Tanner in my life, were the exact words he used. What a jackass.
That's pretty good.
And it was like all caps, doesn't return the message after that. And I'm just like, this motherfucker. And I'm like, I'm looking at you. It was like, who could yell louder? I'm looking at you on television, Nate. No, you're not. Like, it was just like, it was so frustrating. So finally, when he comes out to California, the first thing I did was
put the DVD,
in. And he goes, yeah, let me see this video of this person you think is me. There's Nate shouting directions. Oh, huh. I guess I cornered Evan Tanner once or twice. Like, fucking.
That's awesome.
But it's every.
Okay.
But, what?
All right. I want to tell the Jake Shields story.
Because it's the greatest thing ever.
No, this was. I just told this story the other day. This was so amazing. So I'm down in California with Evan. We went to a grappling tournament, and this was.
I wasn't with you.
Oh, I thought you were. Well,
no,
it's shocking that I don't remember that detail.
I know.
So I'm there at this grappling tournament, and as I'm walking out, and this was the Ultimate Fighter was either airing or just aired. And so at the time, this was the biggest thing in MMA history. Everybody was watching this. It was the reason why the sport is where it is today. So
and
everybody
Jake Shields,
in the MMA world.
And Jake Shields hadn't even fought in Strikeforce yet.
Yeah, nobody knew Jake. And I was one of the most famous fighters in the world, to be quite honest. And so I'm leaving this grappling tournament, and this guy walks up to me with whoever I'm with and just goes, oh, my God, no way. Oh, no, dude, no way. I am such a huge fan. Oh, my God. And I was looking at him, I'm like, hey, thanks, buddy. He's like, oh, dude, oh, man, sir, please. Oh, Mr. Shields, I got to tell you, I'm just such a huge fan of yours. And I'm just kind of standing there smiling at him. And he goes, you know, Mr. Shields, you know, my last fight, the promoter kind of screwed me and he didn't pay me. All he gave me was these DVDs of my fight. And I'm like, I'm trying to raise a little money, you know, to put some scratch together. So I'm like selling DVDs of my fight for like $10 each. And I look at him and I go, huh, Jake Shields feels your pain. He's like, oh man, dude, Mr. Shields, oh, thank you. Yeah, Jake Shields understands what it's like to fight for promoters that are less than desirable employers. Oh, man. Oh, Jake, man. Oh, Mr. Shields is so awesome. So Mr. Shields, you like buy one of my DVDs? Not only will Jake Shields buy one of your DVDs, Jake Shields will buy two of your DVDs. Oh, Mr. Shields, oh, thank you so much, thank you. And so I give him the $20, like, man, Mr. Shields, thank you so much. And I look at him, I go, Jake Shields understands your pain. Jake Shields appreciates your kind words. Jake Shields says, have a nice day. And the guy's just like, dude, Mr. Shields, you're so awesome. I was like, I'm not going to let anybody think poorly of Jake Shields. The guy's awesome.
That is hilarious.
Didn't you say, like, that's the kind of guy Jake Shields is?
Yep.
Yeah.
The kind of guy Jake Shields is.
That's the kind of guy Jake Shields is.
He wants to see you be successful.
Jake Shields wants to see you be successful. There, it never ending. There's a never ending supply of shit with Nate. We were at the expo, and we were about to eat dinner, and. This is the typical MMA fan, too. So we're at the expo. Everybody's going nuts because it's like the first UFC expo ever. So there's just fanboys everywhere. They're punching their girlfriends in the head to get to, like, their favorite fighter. Nate and I are about to eat, so we go to the bathroom to wash our hands. Nate winds up peeing, and this guy walks in, and he starts peeing next to Nate. I'm washing my hands at this time now. And he's like, oh, my God, Nate Quarry! He's got his dick in his hand. And the guy, like, kind of did the reach over with the right arm to his left side kind of thing.
Oh, don't. Jesus.
And Nate was just like, hey, buddy, how's it going? And then the guy's like, oh, man, can I get a picture with you?
Good Lord.
And we're kind of walking out of the bathroom, and Nate's like, I have to go to the bathroom. what was it, Nate? Oh, you were walking to the bathroom. The guy's like, Nate,
I was walking
into
the bathroom. And I just said really loud, because there was a whole bunch of people around, and I knew as soon as you stop for one person, you got to stop for everybody. And I had literally just signed autograph for 8 hours. Literally.
Yeah.
And I just said really loud so everyone can hear, I have to go to the bathroom.
Like a robot.
That was the end of it. And it's funny, like years later, I get this message, or I'm looking at some message board or something, and somebody is saying, oh, I love that guy, Dave Corey, he's so great. And some guy gets on and goes, that guy's a dick. I waited in line for like 2 hours to get his autograph, and I had my son. And then right when we got up to the front, he just left. And so I got on there and I said, okay, I'm sure I know what you're talking about. You're talking about this day where I was paid to be at that booth for 2 hours. And my schedule was such was I was paid to be from one booth from 9 to 11, from 11 to 1, 1 to 3, 3 to 5. So I didn't even have time to eat. To eat that day, I faked having to go to the bathroom, sat in the hallway, and shoved a sandwich down my throat. As I was leaving the table, I'm sure I said, I'm going to this booth. Please follow me. You'll be at the front of the line. I'll sign whatever you have. Please understand. But that's not what he heard. All he heard was, oh. So I said, you know what? To make it up to you, what's your address? I'll send your son an autographed card, which I did. And I never heard back because people are ungrateful assholes.
Yeah, that's fucked.
So, of course. Unbelievable. Of course that's what happened. Of course they didn't say anything.
Yeah, there's no way anyone would, like, write back or, like, even go back to that thread on social media or whatever or the underground and be like, oh, by the way, he sent my kid a card. It was awesome. It just leaves it how it is, or you're the jackass that left him.
Probably kept the card himself, and now his kid still hates me.
Yeah, he tells his kid every day. Remember that time we went to go get Nate and fucking he left? He didn't even send the card.
It's like Kill Bill. Nate's like, son, if you want to come after me when you get older and kill me for doing what I did to your father, then go ahead.
And that kid grew up to run a Reebok MMA.
Flexibility.
Flexibility. Dude, my Nate Quarry story is, if I had it's not even a Nate Quarry story, so it's,
well,
if I had a dollar every time I heard my sister say, konnichiwa, bitches, I'd have a shit ton of dollars. Every time she entered a room for like 2 years after the Ultimate Fighter, konnichiwa, bitches, and I'd be like, God damn.
I am a quote machine, man. I am a quote machine.
Yeah.
Granted, that's the funniest thing to this day that's ever been said on the Ultimate Fighter.
Well,
but my sister ran it.
Nate got it from Dave Chappelle, who coincidentally led to another Nate Quarry story. Nate prides himself at, like, you can't break me when I take a fist picture with a fan, right? You can't break me. We're leaving the weigh-ins. I think, God, it might have been UFC 50. I don't know. It was BJ and Matt Hughes, and we were leaving the weigh-ins, and Nate was doing a stare down with this guy. And at the time, since we were quoting the Chappelle Show so much, there was one. Who is the senator? The guy that's like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
I
we're gonna go to
that.
The White House. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're
go there.
Yeah.
Yeah! And then lost the election. And so Chappelle did a skit where he was like, I love lesbians. Yeah!
Yeah!
So Nate's doing a stare down picture with this guy. And I just walk by him and I go, hey, Corey likes lesbians. And Nate laughs, and as he laughs, he gets that the spit came from his throat, and he spit right in the kid's face. It was
No, he didn't.
Just
that's money.
Just he laughed. The unbreakable Nate said he couldn't be broken. I broke him. Yeah! And he just went.
So that was the same. That was within 15 minutes of the parking lot. So.
Oh, were you racist?
As we're leaving the weigh-ins, people keep coming up to me wanting to take pictures, and I'm always down with that. I'm very, very thankful to the fans that have allowed me to live my dream. So people keep coming up to me wanting a picture, and I'm like, of course. I'll stand here for half an hour or so. That's what I'm here for. Well, this guy keeps coming, this tall black guy who is in charge of security or something like that, as we're standing in the parking lot, like, I need you to leave the parking lot area. Okay. So we move another 20 feet. Somebody else comes up, wants to take a picture. It takes 5 seconds to take a picture. Sir, I told you I need you to leave the parking lot. Okay, we're leaving. Another 10, 20 yards. Somebody else wants a picture. Sir, I need you to leave the area. And so I just say out loud to everyone around, everyone, let's leave the parking lot. We'll go across this imaginary line to where he's no longer in control because the parking lot Nazi won't let us stand here. And this guy, so picture the 6'4", strong black guy, probably in his mid-50s, just says with a deadpan, I am not a Nazi. I am black. And it was just like, damn. That's a good color. So our friend Janelle put that on his shirt with Hitler on it, and it says, I am not a Nazi. I am black. Which is hilarious.
That is classic.
I never saw that shirt. I would have loved to get one. Oh man, yeah. There's seriously, Dan. It goes on and on and on. I mean, I
love all the stories of the guests that we have that know Evan. It's just like it's unending stories.
Yeah, but they never have stories about me because weird shit doesn't happen to me. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I don't have any Evan stories yet either.
Right? Nate, you don't have one. You spent an inordinate amount of time with me.
Well, I think the best one would be I realized how helpful you are when I have to drop a deuce.
Yes.
Because we met, you contacted me, you wanted to do a sketch with me, and I said that would be fine. I don't even care. You can keep all the money if you sell any of them. Just I would like to have the original if that was fine. And you said, cool. So I was in L.A. for a UFC, and you met me up in my hotel room, and I was signing. I was like, I gotta take a dump. I go into the bathroom. You don't stop talking. You keep telling jokes and making me laugh that it was one of the most wonderful dumps I have ever taken. It was incredible. So to this day, whenever I'm bound up, I call up Evan. I'm like, dude, you got to help me out, man. And he will,
That's right.
So he's a good poop wingman.
Yeah, I got that verbal laxative.
Jesus.
I start spitting fire, and then Nate's just like, plop, 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 plop. You're welcome, listeners. Maybe I bet you everybody that listens to this show is like shitting their brains out and can't figure out why.
I was once again reading through something talking about me on a show or something like that, and one of the guys just says, he can never do it. He doesn't have any personality at all. That guy's just so stoic. And I'm like, well, yeah, most people are not going to see me in those moments. And when have you seen me? Before fights or during the Ultimate Fighter, when that was one of the most stressful times of my life, when you're sitting around with 15 other idiots and you never know who you're going to end up fighting. And one of the most stressful things, no TV, no books, no radio, just alcohol, Chris Lieben, and Josh Koscheck for 7 weeks. That will make anyone stoic. And so when they hear these stories and realize, as Kenny Florian actually said on the show, I was the funniest guy on the show. But my wit is very, very dry, very sarcastic. And if you can't take a joke, you're not going to have a good time around me.
You know what's funny? Hey, you'll like this, Dan. When we were doing Tap Out Radio, we had Alex Karalexis on the show. And I go, you know, we had another guy from the season one of The Ultimate Fighter on earlier. And I'm like, who is the funniest, goofiest, fruitiest guy that you know from that house? And he goes, Josh Rafferty? We're like, nah, man, Nate Quarry's like, oh, yeah, Nate. Nate's pretty fruity.
Josh Rafferty?
Josh Rafferty is hilarious, man. We're friends to this day. He cracks me up. But so I'm surprised he didn't give out my nickname right then and there. So it was like the very first night that we were in the house. Now, the house is, it's a big, giant mansion, but it's still set up for a single family of five or six people, not 16 men eating 8,000 calories a day. And the house was on a septic tank. We filled the septic tank on day one. I go in at probably 2 a.m. to drop a deuce, come back into the bedroom, giggling, just trying to keep it down under my breath because I know the other guys are sleeping. And Rafferty's like, what happened? I'm like, dude, I clogged up the toilet. He's like, already? Day one, I'm like, yeah, I flushed it twice. It's not going anywhere. So I got the nickname Two Flush from Alex Karalexis and Josh Rafferty. And then like an hour after that happened, or a half an hour, we hear this from one of the staff, one of the people that's filming the show. God damn it, somebody clogged up the toilet. It was hilarious. And we're just laughing.
That's great.
So you said that that experience was obviously stressful and everything, Koscheck and Liebman and all that. Was there aspects of it, though, that you can look back on and was it enjoyable at all?
Oh, yeah. It was just an incredible experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it was such a stressful time. And for me, fighting itself is a stressful thing because I wasn't fighting for kind of a bonus in my life. This was my work. This was my job. I saw my father die at 62 with nothing to his name but debt and regret. And so at age 30 was when I quit my job as a sign hanger, decided I was going to try and fulfill my dream of being just a full-time professional fighter. And here we were 3-4 years later after that when we had had times of just starvation, and I was pretty much at the end of my rope. I said, well, this career is just not working out. There's just not enough opportunities for me. I'm going to have to retire and figure out what I'm going to do from here. And then the Ultimate Fighter called, and so for me it was really the opportunity, kind of my last chance to try and make something out of this career. So it wasn't like with Couture, for him this was a second chance. He'd already had his wrestling career, he had his degree, he had things that he was doing, and then fighting came along and gave him another opportunity. For me it was construction or fighting, and I did not want to go back to construction. It's just, especially after seeing how little it provides for people, unless you want to become an owner and run crews. And it just wasn't my gig. I wanted to do something else, something that I could really leave my mark on. But the show itself, it really had some very memorable times and just some miserable times.
Well,
and of course, being the first ones, you guys didn't really know, you know, what you were getting into or what the end result would be of it. You know, like, would anybody watch or, you know, if it was going to change, you know, it's just, you don't know what you don't know, and you guys were like the guinea pigs. And, of course, it not just took off, it changed MMA forever.
Yeah, and that's what I find so funny, because Dana, of course, is not going to give credit to anyone but himself for being the genius mastermind that he is. But he will talk about Forrest and Stefan and their fight, and he says, oh, this sport, this fight is what saved the UFC. It's like, no, not really. Because you had free fights on TV before. It just, nothing ever came of it. Nobody really cared because nobody knew who they were. If you put that fight on, Stefan and Forrest, just on a random Tuesday, like a random Saturday or whatever, without the lead-up of the entire Ultimate Fighter Season 1, nobody would have cared. But they knew who we were. They had somebody to root for or to root against. You could hate Chris Leben, or love him, hate Koscheck, or love him, or whatever the case may be. You found somebody to root for and to root against. And that's really the key to putting on successful fights. And that's what just blows me away with the UFC. They're so egotistical. that they think that their product is the UFC brand. And in reality, nobody cares. The UFC is just a well-known brand, like Jell-O. You know, it's just as good as gelatin, but people know the brand Jell-O. They've gotten away from appreciating the fighters and letting the fighters tell their stories and build them. Instead, they'll pick one or two people like Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey, who they feel are going to bring them so much benefit, and they'll blow them up at the expense of everyone else. So you don't know. Dana used to brag, you know every one of our fighters top to bottom. Now you don't, because they have 500 fighters. They just can't work them that often. They'll have guys with layoffs for so long. Plus, the pay has gotten so much worse. And now with the Reebok deal, the fighters are barely scraping by, and they can't afford the personal trainers, the physical therapy, the treatments they need to be the best fighter that they can be at that time. And it's just embarrassing to me how they have treated the sport and the fighters.
Yeah, people invest in fighting because they've invested in the fighters, you know what I mean? Like, the fighters that I care about watching are all people that, you know, I've had a connection with somewhere. You know, you see their interviews, you see their, you know, a lot of the times they're profiled on specials, and you, like, have a connection with them. And now you looked at a UFC card, and, I mean, I've been following the sport forever, like Evan. We'll look at a UFC card, and we won't know, of the 12 fights, we won't know who the fighters in 7 of the fights are.
Yeah. Yeah, because they just,
you know, the notion that everybody knows the UFC roster is completely blown out of the water now.
Yeah.
And conversely,
yeah, and the way that they just
I was going to say that, like, I put my Legends drawing out there, and this guy, like, posted it, just reposted it, and, like, put a thing up, like, can you name all the Legends in this? And, like, people were all over the place. They were calling Jens Pulver Little Heathen. I'm like, what?
Little Eagle?
Little Beagle?
Little Eagle fly again?
Little Eagle's ready to soar again?
Yeah, it's people don't know. I mean,
Marco Huas, no one knew who that was. They're like, who's the Italian guy?
Well, these are all fairly recent fans, so they're going to know the more recent fighters, but they're not getting the exposure that they would need. I remember it was one of the smaller fighters who fought in the undercard 2 or 3 times, then fought for the title. And now all of a sudden he's the world champion and we're all supposed to love him. Like, dude, we have no idea who this guy is. You didn't build him up at all. The simplest thing for the UFC would be to cut probably a third of the roster and actually use the guys that they have on a regular basis. Give them raises. Let them have their sponsorships back. Scrap the Ultimate Fighter other than doing Ultimate Fighter Comeback Series, and taking all of the contenders and allowing the contenders then to fight, and the winner of that then gets to fight for the world title. That did wonders when they did it the first time, because they took legitimate fighters who were good enough to hang in the UFC, put them in a house for 6 weeks. Now all of a sudden you know who they are, you are going to cheer for them or against them, and they're good enough to stay in the UFC even if they don't win the Ultimate Fighter. Whereas now you have 16 guys no one's heard of before, and they're not good enough to hang in the UFC, so when the Ultimate Fighter's done, they're all cut, and it was a huge waste of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of it, too, is it's like the UFC basically, you know, took Strikeforce, took Pride, took the WEC, you know, even back to the WFA and everything, all these other promotions that existed. And they needed to exist. It gave all these fighters an opportunity to fight and play their craft. And now they're all basically either lumped under the UFC umbrella or have been let go, and they show up on Legacy and Titan Fighting and Bellator and all of that. I mean, there was a reason that those promotions could all coexist, because there's enough fighters for everybody. But they folded them all in, and now, you know, we're lucky if we see them once a year.
Zuffa exists under the umbrella that if you have a nickel, then I don't have that nickel, and I need to have your nickel. It's just amazing to me to see that they just truly believe that, well, if this promotion is successful, then we're not as successful as we can be, so we need to crush everyone else instead of actually growing. But, you know, and I just posted this. You've got the lottery is up to over, like, close to $1.5 billion right now, which is just an obscene amount of money.
And so sick.
If for me, and I posted, I never played the lottery, but if I was to buy one ticket and I won $1.5 billion, I would set up a bank, and I would give low-interest loans to people to buy houses. And I would make sure that the house was valued at what they were buying it at. So if they defaulted, then I'd just get the house back, and I wouldn't lose any money. And in that case, you know, I would walk home with $1 billion after taxes, or roughly around there. I think I could pretty safely exist on $500 million for the next 40 years or so, to which point I could make loans of $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 to all these people who actually do need a little bit of a helping hand. And then my legacy would be helping people, making the world a better place, instead of being the, one of the richest people on the planet who went on these great vacations and ran people over and just ridiculous things like that. I just can't comprehend with them why it gets to be a numbers game when the owners of the UFC are each worth $1.5 billion. You have Dana, who's worth roughly $200-300 million. I just can't comprehend that type of mindset where it's never enough. Instead of, no, I have plenty. Now I want to help other people that are deserving. No handouts, just hand-ups. Help people get back to dignity and maybe make something of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're...
Well, by the way, this is the first time I've ever gotten to talk to you, and I've always been a big fan of yours. I wanted to say that I thought that the thing that you did with that fight with the teenager in Oregon, Jake Beckman...
Uh-huh.
That's, as far as I'm concerned, like, that kind of stuff is your legacy. That was so awesome.
Well, thank you.
And you know about that, right, Evan, I'm sure?
No, I don't know. I know about Nate Corey taking a shit when I crack jokes. That's pretty much it.
He fought on an MMA card in Oregon against a teenager who I believe had Down syndrome.
Well, is that Garrett's fight? That's the Stefan Bonner is kind of supports this guy with Down syndrome, Garrett something.
Oh, Garrett Holive? I think I know what you're talking about.
So I remember I was looking at Facebook one day and I saw these people, Mike Pierce and his wife. His wife was talking about this young man, Jacob Beckman, who'd been training for 3 years, training MMA with his coach, and his dream was to become a UFC champion, but it just wasn't in the cards for him because he has Down syndrome. And they wanted to put together a fight with him where he could actually fight for a belt and a small promotion. And they were just kind of kicking it around and thinking, well, how cool it would be if they could find an opponent that would take this fight and help Jacob live his dream. And I was reading that, and I just said to myself, you know what, why not? It's not that big of a deal. I've been given so much. If I can do something like this, so little, it's just an evening of my life, help this kid out and help his mother as well. Let her know that I want to support her and other people feel the same way that I do, then why wouldn't I do it? So I met with Jacob, I met with his mother and his coach, and we actually got together and trained together a couple times, find out what they wanted from me and really assure his mother that my goal was, first off, safety for her son, make sure that there was very little chance of him being injured. He had multiple hip surgeries. So I was concerned that if I was to take him down or I could easily dislocate his hip. I wanted her to know that my main priority was safety for her son. And then way down on the line was safety for myself. And then if we could put this together, I think it'd be a great experience for him. So the STFF, Full Contact Fighting Federation, promotion here in Portland, Oregon, gave us the opportunity to do it, along with the Oregon State Athletic Commission gave their blessing to allow us to do this. We had our weigh-in, and Saturday night, I get there, and they won't let his mother downstairs, so I find Jacob and grab him and take him downstairs, and I'm like, hey, Jake, we're going to go upstairs, and we're going to take a look at the cage. And so we went up there, and I said, well, as soon as you walk into this cage, you got to start blowing kisses and running around the cage like a maniac. Everybody's here to see you. This is your night. We go back downstairs, and it was really cool for me because I got to bring in my team and do the warm-up with me and tape my hands together, and as I was warming up, because I don't want to make sure I don't strain anything or anything like that. I'm old and fat now. And I'm really getting into it, throwing my punches and my kicks. And my girlfriend said, she came up to me afterwards and goes, oh, Jacob just saw that, and he's really scared now. He just asked his coach, Is he going to hit me like that? He's going to destroy me. And so I went up to Jacob and I said, Jacob, man, I'm just warming up, buddy. Just, we all warm up in our own way, and this is your night. You're the star here. You don't have a thing to worry about. And we got into the cage, and he did exactly what we practiced. He, wearing his headphones and sunglasses, ran around the ring blowing kisses, and it was really cool. I was able to have my daughter there cornering me, and she brought out the water in between rounds. She was able to be a part of this. And he put on a really good fight in the first round, almost caught me in an ankle lock at the end of the first, but I was saved by the bell. Second round start, and he came out throwing hammers, just throwing even harder than he was in the first round. Shoots a takedown on me and fell back for an ankle lock, and I had to tap out. So he was, once again, the trying to win a UFC belt escaped me, but it was for a good cause. And I think one of the best is, like I said, doing this for Jacob, doing it for his mother and the whole Down syndrome, the whole special needs community. And it was the number one trending thing on Facebook the next day. It made me feel really good that people would get behind such a thing and show support for it, and that we all do have, we all want to support these communities. It's just quite often we don't know how, and when we're given the opportunity, we will step up.
And now I remember. Now yeah. I remember this. Yeah. Now.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was very impressed with it. And
I like watching it when you look like Nate's like, all right, man, here, now you just hit me. Hey, what the fuck? What the fuck? Hey. Yeah, I said, don't go so hard, Jake.
Well, I threw a jab that landed on his chest, just a real slow jab, and was dragging it back. He came right over the top of the right hand, hit me right on the chin. And, of course, there was a photographer right there, so that was one of the main pictures that got spread around. Me eating one right on the chin, just like usual.
Yeah, well, that's your legacy.
Taking beatings for entertainment.
Taking beatings and coming back. And they call it, quote-unquote, he has heart.
That's my the favorite last thing you want.
Nate's like, one day I want to be known, you know, I don't want them to say how tough I am. Like, that's not how I want to be described, because that sounds like really good at taking an ass whipping and coming back.
I wanted to say elusive, hard to hit. No, that's never going to be on my description.
Straightforward, face first, hit me till you get tired, and then I beat you up.
You know it, buddy.
All right. Well, look, Nate, I know you got stuff to do right now, but, you know, the way we always want to do it, you know, thank whoever you want to thank, plug whatever you want to plug. We're sponsor-free on this show, so you could say whoever you want, and you won't get fined.
Sweet. Well, right now, I spoke yesterday at a big union gathering. We're trying to gather support for the Ali Act. We need the Ali Act to apply to MMA fighters, and it's very simple. It was enacted to protect boxers, protect them from promoters who may not be the most up and up with the matchups and taking care of the fighters. You go to coworker.org and sign the petition. You're going to see fighters that deserve to be there, not ones who are getting extra paydays behind the scenes or getting coddled in their matchups, anything like that. Coworker.org. Of course, the surgery that brought me back to fighting almost 10 years ago now was the XLIF, XLIF, and I actually worked with the company as a spokesman. If you go to thebetterwayback.org, if you're having back pain or leg pain from sciatica, we can help you find a surgeon that will help diagnose you, and it'll be a surgeon that does the XLIF procedure that I had. Again, I don't diagnose anyone. I don't suggest getting surgery to anyone. I just help direct them to the surgeons that help give me my life back. And one of the better things is I don't get a commission either if you end up getting surgery. So I'm completely altruistic in my ideals for helping you get the help that you need. And what I do make money on is my Zombie Cage Fighter brand. Go to zombiecagefighter.com. Although I don't make money off of the free comic book that I have offered there. So if you can download a PDF of the issue zero that was launched in 2012, buy a shirt while you're there, and you can get a hard copy of it as well. I'll be more than happy to autograph it for you. And I'm just telling that story. So if you see me at a Comic-Con, come up and see me, get a shirt, get a comic book. I'm working on the 6-issue miniseries right now that'll tell the whole story that I wrote. Zombie Cage Fighter is my biographical horror story. It's what I've been through, seen, and done as a fighter and as a single father plus zombies. So it's got MMA, it's got single father issues, it's got zombies. What more could you want?
Bitches.
Yeah.
Big-titted bitches.
Yeah. Big boobies. Yeah.
Nate loves lesbians.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our show. So take us out, Nate, with a big yaw.
That's it for today. Go to zombiecagefighter.com and get your gear. Yeah.